This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:34 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Mark Tan. But first, we turn over to what's going on in Cambodia. On July 28th, Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen will make a bid for his seventh term in office when the country holds general elections.
Now, he will most certainly win. His party, the Cambodia People's Party, or CPP, not only holds all the advantages of incumbency, but is also the major party in the running. This month, the sole credible opposition party, the Candlelight Party, was barred from this year's elections over paperwork issues. In the lead-up to the July polls, the government also shut down The Voice of Democracy, one of the last remaining media outlets.
And sentenced opposition leader Kem Sokha to 27 years of house arrest. Hun Sen, now aged 70, has been at Cambodia's helm for 38 years. So will his politics continue to reign for further decades to come? And what does this then mean for Cambodian democracy and national development?
For a better understanding of Cambodian politics, we have on the line with us Sebastian Strangio, Southeast Asia editor at the foreign policy portal The Diplomat. He's also the author of the books In the Dragon's Shadow and Hun Sen's Cambodia. Sebastian, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, before we get into the political landscape ahead of the July elections, can we start with a brief primer on Prime Minister Hun Sen? He's the longest serving leader of Cambodia. How would you assess his nearly 40 years in power?
Well, during the course of Hun Sen's career, he has shown a remarkable ability to bend with the political winds. He has headed a communist party during the 1980s. He managed a transition to multi-party elections during the 1990s under the close scrutiny of the international community, and has since worn down, outlived, and eradicated by force most of his political opponents. Hun Sen is a consummate political survivor. And the recent crackdown is merely an iteration on a previous theme.
Now, how have Hun Sen and his government prevented all these opposition parties from gaining ground in the country, especially lead up to this particular elections in July?
They've used the familiar methods. They've gone after them in the courts. They've come up with bespoke, tailor-made rules that in order to prevent opposition parties from registering or organizing effectively. In fact, in many ways, the political landscape closely resembles that prior to the election in 2018, when a CPP-controlled court disbanded the Cambodian National Rescue Party, then a very popular opposition party, arrested Kem Sokha, and went after the independent press, just as it's doing now. We see a very close parallel in the barring of the CLP, the Candlelight Party, from participation in this year's election, and the shuttering of the Voice of Democracy, which really stepped into the breach after publications like the Phnom Penh Post and the Cambodia Daily were closed down or muted in the run-up to the 2018 election.
So, which begs the question, why does Hun Sen continue this illusion of democratic elections, even though they are neither free nor fair?
Well, the illusion is growing increasingly thin. Since 2018, the CPP has been really the only political party of note in Cambodian politics. There have been a smattering of smaller parties, including some opposition parties. But these have either been too small to make any real difference or have been de facto allies or de jure allies of the CPP. In 2018, for the first time, we saw a Cambodian election that did not feature a competitive opposition. Mm. And the emergence of the Candlelight Party threatened to create a new locus for opposition to the CPP. I think Hun Sen is concerned about social and political stability at a sensitive time. He's about to hand over power to his son Hun Manet, a long-planned transition that, you know, is a could lead to intra-party tensions bubbling up to the surface. And so I think that he wants to maintain a tight control of Cambodian politics ahead of this crucial period of transition.
I'm curious about Cambodian public perception towards Hun Sen, because, I mean, it seems that his actions, it indicates a sense of insecurity in a way. But even if there were a viable opposition in the elections, is there a clear likelihood that he would be defeated or, would he still command the large popular vote?
The Candlelight Party won about 22% of the popular vote at commune elections last year. And that, I think, offers a rough gauge of what it would likely have won in July were it permitted to participate. The party has been forced, even prior to its being barred, it was forced to operate in tightly circumscribed circumstances. Party leaders were being taken to court on all sorts of politically motivated charges. There were violent attacks on members of the party, and there was a constant pressure from the CPP for members of the party to defect to the ruling party. And so I think that within these constraints, there was a limit to how well the party would have done. Mm. And this does pose a bit of a puzzle as to why Hun Sen would eradicate the last remaining pretense of Cambodia's multi-party democracy. Mm. The country has come under a lot of pressure from the West recently, since 2018, for its attacks on the multi-party system that the UN brought in the early 1990s. And I think that it would have been a relatively low-cost way of demonstrating that Cambodia was not a total one-party state. And I think the fact that Hun Sen is willing to pay that cost in terms of his relationship with senior Western, the major Western democracies, suggests two things. One, that he enjoys strong enough backing from China now that he no longer needs or cares about Western opinion. And the second, that, you know, he still remains deeply paranoid about the possible intersection of foreign pressure and domestic opposition. And so he feels, you know, especially ahead of, as I said, the looming power transition, but to his son. And I think that he, you know, that is a price, his relationship with the West is a price he's willing to pay in order to ensure that this transition comes off smoothly and that his legacy is preserved beyond him stepping down as PM.
Okay, let's talk about the handover of power to his elder son, Hun Manet. What do we know about Hun Manet? What kind of leader will he be? And will the powers even within Hun Sen's party accept him?
He's a pretty opaque figure. He was educated at West Point in the United States. He has a military career behind him, although given his proximity to his father, one can question whether his military career has any basis in merit. Cambodia is a very nepotistic, the Cambodian political system is very nepotistic, and he has been elevated through the ranks at a speed, you know, far beyond his capabilities. It is clear that the administration that Hun Manet would head would be of a very different sort than that his father has headed. Hun Sen really came of age in a time of war and conflict. He was somebody who learned about politics on the battlefield and then stepped into the political arena and brought a lot of those methods with him. Hun Manet has grown up in prosperity. He's grown up wealthy. He's enjoyed the fruits of urban life, global travel, a world-class education. He comes from a very different background than his father and would likely govern in a very different way. The cabinet that he would likely lead is going to be made up of the sons and daughters, mostly the sons, of prominent CPP politicians. This transition is a generational transition as well as simply a handover from Hun Sen to his son. And a lot of these figures are educated in the West, are quite capable, actually, in certain senses. Some of them are able technocrats. And so I think we'll see Cambodia, you know, the tenor of Cambodian politics potentially shift. Mm. I don't think that Hun Manet is necessarily going to push the country anymore in a more democratic direction. I think that one needs to be careful about assuming that simply because he was educated in the West that he's picked up democratic values. I think Cambodia will continue to be run along broadly similar lines. But I do think that the perception of Cambodian politics as a zero-sum battle, as an extension of the battlefield, effectively, I think that will be moderated as Hun Sen's generation steps back.
Sebastian, thank you very much for speaking with us. That was Sebastian Strangio, author and Southeast Asia editor with the foreign policy portal The Diplomat, giving us a rundown of Cambodia's political landscape and what to expect in the upcoming elections. Elections in inverted commas.
Yeah, what's interesting is Hun Manet, right? So what the little bit we know about him. So yes, you can be educated overseas. You could have even gone to some university in England, but it doesn't change your perception or at least your acceptance of autocratic rule. And this brings to mind Bashar al-Assad and Syria, right? He went to study in UK. He even worked there for many years. And then he came back to Syria and became exactly like his father, if not worse.
Well, this is definitely something to watch, given that it's a country in our very own region and backyard. I think I'll be curious to see also implications for ASEAN, whether that changes dynamics there. Lots to watch on this front. 7:45 in the morning, we're going to head into some messages. But when we come back, we'll discuss the European Union's deforestation-free products regulation and its impact on our agribusiness. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.